Blog Talk Radio. gentlemen. It's Saturday night, and this is Off the Chain with your host, Yvonne Mason. That was like freak. I had told my guests that I was going to play People Are Strange, but it's another one of those I had a brain cramp. I was deciding between the two and decided I liked La Freak better, and there's a reason for that, which we will get into momentarily. But I have some exciting news. Other than the exciting, part of the exciting news is my friend Hydra M. Starr, who I absolutely adore, is with us tonight, along with her partner in crime, Alder Strauss. But we will get into those guys shortly. This morning when I ran our numbers, we're at 68,479 listeners just on this show. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be at 70,000 listeners on this show before we turn around good. And we're well on our way to 100,000 listeners worldwide in over 70 countries and God knows how many podcasts, because we have reached 86,155 listeners total. That includes all of our podcasts up on iTunes, YouTube, TuneIn Radio, FM.com, SoundCloud, MixCloud, Spreaker, Podcast.com, and Podcast Garden, and I don't know how many more where they get picked up by other podcast people. I am so proud of y'all, of my guests, of my listeners. I'm just beside myself because this show's not even 2 years old, and we're going places I never, ever thought we would go. It amazes me the success that I'm seeing from the guests that I have on the show, that they're getting results from being on this show. Guest I had on the other night said she about fell over in the floor when she saw that she was selling books in Germany and Australia and the UK in places she'd never sold books before. And speaking of Australia, thank you guys, because y'all are 97% of my listening base on this show. And y'all brought us the Teskey Brothers. If you haven't heard the Teskey Brothers, go listen to them. They are a blues band that will just absolutely rock your world. And speaking of rocking the world, like I said, my beautiful, beautiful friend, Hydra M. Starr, along with Alder Strauss, are my guests tonight. Hydra owns her own magazine, and she likes to say that she began her existence as one half of a set of twins. She ate her twin. I mean, the girl can't help it. Almost from her birth as an only child, she had an intense interest in all things mysterious and magical. As she aged, her tastes matured and darkened. From the Disney-esque-styled fairy stories of childhood to the erotic horror she writes and publishes today, her work is often inspired by legend and folklore, with violent werewolf sex being one of her favorite things. So consider your triggers warned. In addition to writing, Hydra designs and hand-burns a line of power graphic-y items featuring symbols and signs from the various occult and magical traditions. She is also the publisher of Infernal Ink magazine and the owner of Infernal Ink Books, both of which she uses as platforms to bring the most twisted and sexually depraved horror and dark fiction she can find to the world. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I can attest to that. I've read some of her work. Also, she brought into her web of darkness a young man named, and I'm hoping I'm pronouncing it right, Alder Strauss. I love that name. I need to put it in a book. He loves where he lives, being particularly, he was homegrown in Bellingham, Washington, being particularly fond of the Seattle and Portland areas and their surrounding natural beauty. Alder has been writing since early adolescence, drawing much of his focus in the mystery and horror genre, and his various works published in Infernal Ink magazine and the Nightmare Engine, horror fiction magazines under another name, among others. Now, why he needed to use another name, I don't know, because his name is absolutely stunning. It sticks with you. It sounds poetic and aristocratic and royal. So we're going to ask him that. Why did he think he had to use a pen name? Hi, guys. It's good to see y'all tonight.
Hello. Congrats on all the great numbers for your show.
Thank
you're
you,
really,
my darling.
You're really doing great with it.
It's because of all y'all. I didn't, you know, I could sit here and talk all night and nobody'd listen. It's when I bring people like y'all on that everybody wants to listen to that the numbers go through the roof. So thank you.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, thank you again for Yeah, thank you so much for, like, of course, having us on the show, and congratulations as well to
those numbers. I'm just amazed that we're hitting worldwide audiences, and I almost feel like I should have brought my translator, but, you know, that's why we have Google Translate, right? So
exactly.
Oh, yeah.
So, Alder, since Hydra's been on the show before, I'm going to delve into the mystery of you first, and then we'll get to Miss Hydra. Because you started writing at a very early age. What drew you to writing? Why did you want to write? Was it something that you needed to do? Was it something that you fell into? Was it the environment of Washington? Because I've been to Washington. It can be a dreary, dark, and wet place.
Yeah, I mean, perfect, you know, perfect for a literary bull to grill in the brain, right?
Exactly.
I think, I've just been kind of looking back, because I started really drawing, you know, before writing. I started, like, sketching and stuff, like, when I was, you know, like a toddler, you know, on up into, like, kindergarten and that kind of stuff. And, you know, I think it was just, I don't know exactly what influenced me to start writing. I just think maybe, I recently, you know, I've been playing music, you know, playing bass and whatnot for around, like, 10 or so years. And also been working on doing just some, you know, amateur kind of photography to try to make it look professional. And, you know, I still draw and stuff, but, you know, I'm trying to figure out myself exactly where I went from drawing to writing to photography to music. And I think it's just that I see a challenge in many different types of forms of artistic expression, creative expression. And, you know, it's something that I just wanted to explore. Like, I think maybe something would trigger it. Like, I would see a surreal photo up on the wall, and, like, you know, that's really cool. And then things would come into my head, and I'd want to capture those. Or I heard a really great song or a certain part of a song, and I want to, you know, then that kind of led down the rabbit hole, so to speak, and so on and so forth. So I think maybe if I were to pick an origin, it'd probably be like I read something or a passage. And I wanted to do something like that. I had an idea that spawned from it, and I wanted, I wanted to go with it. So I'd have to say that that's probably what spurred me into writing.
Why did you go into the horror and dark mystery genre?
Honestly, I've always been fascinated in things that kind of, I guess, were forbidden or dare I say, you know, taboo. You know, I was raised in a Christian home. I don't know if that had a direct influence of it, but it was always like, oh, you can't do this. This is bad. Just never mind why. You just can't do it because it says so. John or Matthew or Galatians something like that told you no, but never really explained why. And I've always wanted to explore those mysteries. And in religious influence aside, you know, is this, what's in that darkness? You know, what does mythology have to say about it? What does horror fiction have to say about it? What does psychology have to say about it? And how can I influence this in my writing? And that's always been, like, you know, the dark and dismal, even the seedy, like the crime books and stuff, even like Raymond Chandler's stuff, and not exclusive to horror, just the stuff that's not all rosy and happy. And, you know, if it is rosy and happy, where's the dirt? I want to find the dirt. I want to, like, immortalize the dirt.
I like that idea, because Hydra will tell you, I don't believe in happily ever after either. There's always a darkness to people. They can say, oh, no, there's no darkness to me. They lie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So,
well,
Ms.
You know,
Hydra, it's your turn. Tell the folks about you. Because it's been a minute. You were on one of my very first shows.
Yeah.
And I am forever grateful for that.
Well. Well, I'm back. What do you want to know about me? Writer? I guess I'm an artist.
Why do you write on the dark side? Same reason?
It's just kind of what comes out. I don't really have a good answer for that. you know, when I was younger, I wasn't really into reading until I was probably about 12 or 13. And it was Edgar Allan Poe that first got me really interested in reading anything. And from there, you know, I graduated on to, you know, the more serious horror instead of the gothic stuff that Poe did. And I don't know, it just intrigued me and I wanted to create it.
See, Poe's my favorite author. I've loved Poe since I was 9, 10 years old because he writes, even when he wrote Annabelle Lee, it had a darkness to it.
Yeah.
And it would be safe to say that without the darkness, there can be no light. So we have to show that darkness.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think it's good for you to get it out in a healthy way. Because, you know, I mean, people say a lot about violent video games and movies and even literature. But I think it's good and healthy for people to explore that in a forum where people aren't actually getting hurt.
Good point.
Because I think there's a part of humanity that needs that. Because, I mean, you know, in the Roman times, they had the Colosseum where they would go watch people be tortured and killed and fight animals and all that. And now we have horror movies. It's a lot better.
And we have boxing. Now, how much more violent can you get than boxing?
I know.
People
there's just something in humans that I think need that.
Yeah.
We need that relief.
I'm sitting
football.
Here watching.
I mean, football is fun.
Yeah.
All of it.
I'm sitting here watching these grown men knock each other out, and I asked my husband, I said, why do these men like to punch each other in the face till they can't see and they're bloody and they have permanent damage? To me, that is not intelligent.
No, it's not the most healthy outlet at times. I mean, I guess there's safe ways to do it, but it doesn't seem like the most healthy outlet. No.
Alder, what's your take on this?
You know, I think it's just ingrained in our DNA or genetics as human beings. There's always that, you know, that combative nature and anything. You know, nothing is utopian, but nothing is dystopian either. You know, there's got to be that balance that's out there. And, you know, I guess you could say that Grand Theft Auto would be, you could say it could be like a public service, you know, benefit or something, because people are like, you know, like, yeah, I really want to rear end that guy until his car explodes, you know. Okay, well, oh, there's a video game for that. All right, you, John Smith, are going to get it, you know. And so, you know, you have these outlets, you know, you have these, like, violence placebos, if you will, you know. And that's why you get video games with lots of gun violence and, you know, give people some warnings, you know, so the kids don't think, you know. And of course, you know, your kids get it. You're like, you know, this is not real, right? You know that if you go out and do this, you will get arrested, or worse. You're like, yeah, Dad, now there's no way I got to kill this person. You know, he teabagged my corpse the other day. You know, I got to go back, you know, do something to him. So, you know, I feel that it's paying attention to the natural aspect of us as animals. You know, of us as, you know, that's why there's always going to be wars. There's always going to be conflicts. You know, that's why even the perfect, prim little housewives, you know, the Christian housewives and stuff, why they love to sit at home. And, you know, a lot of them like to sit at home, you know, watch the soaps, like to see the cheating and, you know, and the betrayal and stuff. Because, you know, without that, life would just be boring, wouldn't it? You know, and you wouldn't appreciate the fact that you have a faithful husband, right? So.
Good point. That's an excellent point. I hadn't thought about it that way. Something. No, folks, y'all can't go delving into their book yet. You got to wait a while because you're going to miss stuff. So, let's talk a little bit about Infernal Ink magazine and then the Nightmare Engine, because Alder, you have articles in the Infernal Ink magazine, right?
Yeah, I have. Let's see. Correct me if I'm wrong, Hydra, but I have two stories I have what do we call it? A Spooky a Paranormal Encounter. I don't know if they're still doing that, but I had one. And then I had what was it, an author debut. I'm totally can't remember exactly what the title of that is, but it's like an author creature feature kind of thing. So I have
the author Bordello.
There you go, thank you.
Yeah.
Author Bordello. I got half of it right. So I have four things in there, and actually, the first story I ever submitted, I believe that got published at all, was through Infernal Inc. So I don't know how long ago that
was.
Yeah,
so
how long is,
that was.
How long is,
that's been, I want to say that was 2013.
Oh, geez. Like 5 years
yeah,
ago?
It's been, it's been like 5 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, and that story was about cannibalism.
Yeah, I was just going to mention it was kind of a playoff of the movie Hostel, which was actually part in part kind of an influence for this anthology, and we can get into that a little later if you want. But it was essentially about these two friends that go to this Romanian, I think it's like a Romanian country, I didn't exactly specify, but they go to a Romanian-esque country and or area, and they go to this nightclub, and since they're American, and their dollar goes that 10,000% more than it would in the U.S., and so, of course, they're like, you know, these women eye them and then take them back, and, of course, it's in Frilling, so they have freaky sex with them, of course, and then they wake up at a table the next night without their legs, you know, and
okay.
One of them is already in a wheelchair. And so there's kind of a comedic aspect where he's already in a wheelchair before, and then his friend is not in a wheelchair, you know, he's not paraplegic, but he kind of becomes that way because they both wake up without their legs around this table. And, you know, and the guy in the wheelchair is like looking at his friend freaking out, and his friend's freaking out like, "What you? I don't have my legs." He's like, "Where's my legs?" And his friend looking at him like, "So what? You never use them anyway. You just sit at home playing video games all the time. What do you care? You're not going to miss them." You know, and the thing is that his friend in the wheelchair is so in love with this girl they just met the night before, who feels like, you know, he's their soulmate, but she's just with her family chopped off his legs, but he doesn't care because, you know, he can't feel it. You know, it's like he can feel love, you know. So in a way, it's kind of a love story at the end, and his friend's just like, you know, just doesn't get it, and it becomes kind of like at the end it reveals in a way it's like a family ritual tradition. So I guess in a way, I just thought of it now. It just came to me that another form of appreciation that is paraplegic before, you know, his pre-paraplegic friend who doesn't care that his legs are gone, mm-hmm. Could see it as a rite of passage into this family, you know, and being part, and you know, in I guess in a way of some kind of sick marriage with this woman that he feels he's destined to be with. And then the story kind of leads off a bit from there, and I won't get too much into it. I encourage people to, you know, of course, plug. I'm plugging Infernal Magazine for people to go check it out. And I forget which issue, so buy them all. You know.
So Hydra, let's talk about Infernal Inc. How long has Infernal Inc. been out? What made you want to go there? And I know it's successful because it's been out a while. And what is in it, and what does someone need to do if they want to make a submission?
Okay, well, the first issue came out in April 2012, so it's been like 5 years since it came out. My partner and I at the time, we were writing for a now defunct magazine, Herotica, and things weren't going so well. We could kind of tell it was about to be defunct. The editor, he's since passed away. He was very ill at the time, and things just weren't going good. And there really wasn't a lot of magazines and anthologies at that time that would take horror that included graphic sex. You know, little mentioning of sex was okay, but nothing, you know, nothing in detail. So we decided to, you know, just kind of try it ourselves. You know, kind of figured we couldn't do any worse than the way things were going with the current magazine we were with. And started our own, and, you know, kind of told people, as long as it's not something that's going to get us, you know, sued, arrested, or otherwise kept from publishing will pretty much consider it, and been going with it ever since, and will soon be branching off into publishing books.
That's amazing, because I remember when the magazine first started coming out, and you were doing it twice a year, right?
Yeah, I'm going back to twice a year next year. I've been doing it four times a year, but in order to get the books out, I want to get out, I need to kind of cut the magazine in half a little bit. Yeah, I mean, I'm only one person.
Oh,
Infernal Link is now just me. I mean, Infernal Link is now just me. No more partner. So, yeah, I'm going back to two times a year next year and going to be putting out some books. Already have about six authors signed up, working on things or have submitted things that are going to be part of Infernal Link books. So, and same as with the magazine, it's, you know, erotic horror.
And is that all you're going to accept on your publishing side is erotic horror?
I will consider connected genres that have erotic elements to them, such as, you know, like erotic kind of darker sci-fi or, you know, more like gothic fiction, supernatural sort of fiction, paranormal fiction. But it all does need to have the erotic element to it.
So, ladies and gentlemen, if you're looking to publish an erotic horror and you're having trouble getting a publisher, hook up with Hydra and see if she'll take your work, because this is a genre that is not that well publicized, and it's one that has sort of been in the corners for a while.
It's really not. I mean, for example, Amazon won't even let you run ads through them for anything that's labeled erotica. So
that's
it's really
like
pushed off in a corner.
Yeah,
you cannot. If you have your book listed as an erotic book, you cannot buy ad space through Amazon for it. And I believe I haven't completely gotten down to the bottom of it, but I believe Google Ads is the same way.
So you can buy dildos through Amazon, but you can't advertise erotica.
Through Amazon, but you can't advertise.
Well,
they won't let you get the advertisement to, you know, get more eyes on the page.
No, I don't know.
It kind of has to be something people just find.
Well, yeah, my cousin's friend, and I'm not just saying this because, you know, to make myself look better, it's actually true. My cousin's friend said to my cousin that he received a weird package that he had to call Amazon on, and it was like he ordered a book and got a dildo, so I don't know how they messed that up. So there's a marketing technique there for you, Hydra. There's a marketing technique for you.
There's a marketing technique.
Order a book, get a dildo in the book. Yeah, that works.
Dildo in the book. You know, with what I publish, it could definitely work.
Yeah.
BC bookmark, you know, a BC
work.
Bookmark.
Hey.
Yeah, BC bookmark.
I love it. Well, nice. Since we're talking about that, what is a nightmare engine, Alder?
The nightmare engine just was like, I don't know if they're still doing, because I haven't heard from the person who was actually doing it, coordinating it and created it. But it was essentially just like short horror fiction, and he was an illustrator and horror writer, and it was, you know, just it didn't have any particular theme, but it seemed to kind of go more towards the Lovecraftian feel or old school classic kind of horror, but it didn't really have like a trademark theme like the like Infernal Link does. It wasn't like, you know, erotic horror, you know, and if it didn't have the erotic part, you know, you couldn't contribute. It was just like, oh, just send some generic horror, and if he likes, he'll put it in. And when I when I started writing, a little history on my writing, if you will, I started trying to write novels, and I could just never get through it. I don't know why, but then I switched paces a bit and cut down the work into doing short stories, and I found a method that I could successfully do short stories, and I kept writing, and then I had some 19, and I did a self-publishing collection for myself, and then I took those stories that were in there, and I was, you know, when I got my Two Gracious Guests, is that Cannibalistic Stories called, that when that was published through Hydra, you know, I found other people that had that, you know, that kind of stuff that, you know, obviously I don't normally write erotic stuff with erotica in it. So when I was doing that for Hydra, I really had to lube up my imagination, so to speak, and, you know, get in there and really get into that. So with the ones that didn't require that erotic aspect, it was really easy because I already had the stories written, and so I would send them out to them, and more often than not, they would be accepted. And Nightmare Engine, I think, accepted three of mine. It's been like a good 3 years or something since I've heard anything, so I don't even know if they're still around. So
basically, when you hooked up with Hydra, you had to literally step out of your comfort zone and reach into an even darker place that you didn't know existed.
Yeah, I had to really challenge myself and, write something that was, erotic and try not to make it too Disney romantic, because I am kind of a hopeful romantic in that respect. I need to be like, okay, this is Hydra. I read some of her stories. Okay, I gotta throw something in here that's a little bit deviant. So, you know, and I was lucky enough to when I experimented with that. Her criticisms is like, well, put some more detail in there, and you know, that kind of thing. And then I went back and did that, but it wasn't like, well, you suck at writing erotica. You shouldn't even be having sex. You should have a license to operate a penis. You know, it was nothing like that.
Hydra's real good about encouraging people and helping them come out of that comfort zone and exploring those corners of their creative mind they didn't know they had. And I know she's helped several writers do that, and kudos, Hydra, because that takes a special person to be able to pull that out of somebody.
Yeah. And you know what?
It's in there, you know.
Well, I had one story I submitted to her, and she did some time period criticism with some verbiage I had in there, and you know, that opened up my mind to consider more of a historical accuracy. And I didn't even think that what I did was a historical fiction piece. And she's like, well, I like where it's going, but based on this kind of thing, they probably wouldn't use that verbiage. So, I have since to correct it. But it's just sitting there. It's not doing anything. But once I feel that it's worthy of sending to someplace, then I'll be consulting with her, you, Hydra, again, and have you go over it one more time. I'm sure you know what story I'm talking about.
Yeah, okay. I know what you're talking about.
Now,
and I just looked it up. You were in your first story was in the October 2013 issue.
Mm-hmm.
So 5 years ago. Of the magazine. Yep.
Yeah, it's the one with all the bats. I love that one. Yeah. Then my second one was April 2014, Volume 3, Issue 2.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, thank you for that.
So, how did you and Alder decide to put together this beautiful anthology? Ladies and gentlemen, the anthology is called Bon Appetit, which is French for good appetite. And I'm going to let Hydra and Alder explain this wicked little anthology and how, why, what, when, and where, because there's several of my author friends that are in there that have contributed to it. So, Hydra, I want you to start off. How did this thing come about and why?
Well, It was actually a few years ago now. I can't remember. I want to say it was 2014 or 15. Alder first approached me, and at the time I had kind of taken on writing a couple of things for some different anthologies, and I have the magazine. I was just really, really swamped at that point. And he approached me with the idea for this anthology, and I was like, you know, I can't fit it in. Like, I couldn't at that point in time. And I remember I talked to my partner at the time about it, and I said, you know, it's a good idea. I just, you know, we kind of agreed, just did not have the time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2016, Tim and I finally got to meet in person in April of 2016. And when I came back, I was just, you know, from my trip, I was like, you know, I kept thinking about the anthology, and I was like, you know, I probably could fit it in this year or in the, you know, fit it in within the next year and have it out next year, you know, in 2017. And I just kind of asked him, you know, hey, are you still interested in doing this? And
yeah.
He was.
Well, you know, truth be told, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I completely forgot about it. Like, I was like, I don't know why. Because I got so busy with school, you know, I was working on my BA. And you know, when the submissions came in and we went over everything and stuff, I was still really, really crazy busy with school. But I had forgotten all about it. And then she's like, oh, the anthology, a Campbell anthology thing. And I'm like, oh, yeah, let's do it, yeah.
It was her reminding me, you know, it wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be on this show, you know, and the world may have collapsed as we know it. So.
What made you call it Bon Appetit?
You know, I wanted some kind of, you know, I think, you know, I wanted some kind of perverted or perverse prestige to it. Because, you know, I wanted to play off the taboo of cannibalism, but I wanted to, like, turn it on its head. And I wanted to make it something to where it was, like, something enjoyed by the elites, by the aristocrats, by those who, you know, like, you'd have to, like, own three properties in order to, like, taste of the flesh of a peasant or something like that. You know, you'd have to, like, have some kind of, like, shield to your family's name or something like that, some royalty. You know, so I wanted to give it that kind of prestigious feel, and what more prestigious could it be, you know, than with, mm-hmm. with a French sound or with a Bon Appetit, with a very polite gesture, you know. And, you know, I think that really twisted it more so, and you know, maybe through my own fault, added vicariously to the taboo of cannibalism. But I think you know, and I was thinking earlier today, I'm like, oh, well, she asked the question of how they come up with the idea of the idea of cannibalism. You know, honestly, I think what came to was that synchronicity with that name, and also with the fact that I had seen some scenes of, like, the Green Inferno, and those just, like, stained my mind. They just stuck into my mind, like, that just brutal gore. And also, more importantly, I think Hostel 2, which is, you know, those are both Eli Roth films, and he's not shaky around the gore. He likes to get in there. But there's a brief passing scene in Hostel 2 where there's this guy with, like, part of his leg skinned off or, you know, cut off, and he's just, like, looks like he's on life support, but he's crudely on this table, and this old man comes up to him and sticks a fork in his leg, and then the carves, and as he's carving, the guy's just convulsing. It was just so, how they did it was just, it just so burned in my mind. And then, of course, he just takes off that side of meat, puts it on a plate, goes back to where he has his candle lit on his table, and just eats it like it's a steak, like there's nothing at all. And, like, you know, I want that kind of feel for this anthology if I were to do it. I'm like, you know, we should do it. Let's do it. And then I, of course, thought of Hydra, because I worked with her in the past, and she's honest. She's brutal. She knows how to get shit done. And I needed to get this shit done because I didn't have time for it to fester for, like, 2-3 years, you know?
I like the idea because it brings out the inner, what's the word I'm looking for? I would venture to say that 90% of the population has thought about some form of cannibalism.
It's quite a bit. Yeah, it's quite common if you think about it. If you look through history, you know, because I, with my anthologies, I like to go all out, and so I did a what I call a bite-sized history of cannibalism, and it's just a brief introduction, of course, because there's so much in cannibalism. You know, there's so many different ways that's being, you know, of course, it's all Hollywoodized here, but, you know, in the brief history or in the bite-sized history, I go over just how it all started, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago and what anthropologists, you know, theorized as the methods of it, you know, and on forward through the New Guinea tribes and other such native tribes and how they honor cannibalism and they see it as a rite of passage and the utmost respect for their dead ones. You know, it's called endocannibalism. You know, just all this stuff is so expansive. And I wanted to include a little bit of that in the anthology, too. I just didn't want it to be that shock, horror, gore fest kind of thing. You know, I wanted some people to get, you know, I wanted to get their fill, if you will, off of, you know, this concept.
Oh, what a play on words. And you also wanted to educate them.
Yes, you know, and to be to say from here, the complete title is Bon Appetit: Stories and Recipes for Human Consumption. So as you can see, I like to play on the like words, and I love puns. So there's tons of puns in this anthology. So
now, Hydra, you do know that someone could take and. Because I just had a flash go through my head. So if someone were of the mind, they could take the anthology, they could create a novel around the anthology and become a serial killer in the novel using the anthology as their recipe book.
Oh, they very well could. You know, we put a little disclaimer in there, though, that this is not to encourage cannibalism.
Well, see, that you know how my mind works.
Oh, yeah,
well, you know.
Keep
it lean and legal is what we say.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting here, my mind's going, yes, Yvonne, you could take that, you could make the anthology wired into a novel. Your killer could use the anthology as the basis for his crimes and how he gets away with them. And then at the end, blame it on the anthology because that's what serial killers do. They're narcissistic sociopaths, and everything's everybody else's fault. So they could blame it on the book.
Now, serial killers do have some bad traits too, okay? So, you know. Well, that's why we have disclaimers, you know. It's like, hey, we don't advocate any of this. This is for entertainment purposes only. And, Yvonne, if you want to write a novel about that, you know, you better let us know ahead of time because we want a piece of that shit. So,
so Hydra, how many authors do you have in the book?
There are 18 stories total. I contributed one, Alder contributed one, and then we have, 16? Other contributors.
Yeah, we have 16. So there's 18 different authors in all.
And is one of them Rick Powell?
Yes,
of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. It would be an anthology without Rick. Shout out to Rick Powell.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can't. Yeah, I mean, Rick, he really knocked it out of the park too. You know, he played with his passion, which is. I don't know if he's ever talked to you about this, but his passion for children's issues, for, you know, against child abuse and things like that. He kind of played with that in the story.
Ooh.
Because there's a killer. There's a killer in his story who targets children and becomes prey himself. So, it's pretty interesting.
You live by the sword, you die by the sword, you know. You are an abuser, you become abused. It's just the way it happens.
Yeah, that's that's definitely a story where you're not going to feel bad about what happened.
Yeah.
Love it.
No, I agree, yeah.
Who are some other authors that I might know? Robert Lutherford.
Robert's not in this one. He does poetry, and we didn't take poetry for this one. So who else might you know? Well, if any of your fans are and listeners are into, you know, industrial music and that sort of thing, heavy metal, Reverend Thomas Thorne of the Electric Hellfire Club fame, he wrote a story. It blew me away because I always had a lot of respect for his talent as a singer and musician. And when he said, when he submitted something, I was like, that's good. But he's a rock star. I wasn't expecting great authorship, but he blew me away. His story absolutely blows me away. And his is a take on, or it's kind of a before the fact, a story dealing with the building from Rosemary's Baby.
Ooh.
So yes, it deals with it's the same building and everything. So.
Oh, building! I thought you said building coming out of or building upon a story.
No. It's the same building from the story in Rosemary's Baby. Because you remember the building in the movie, it has like this dark history, his story is part of the building's dark history.
I like that. I did not catch that. I don't know where I was that day, but
although you were asleep at the wheel, honey, is where you were.
It plays into that dark history, so it's cool.
Victorian era cannibalism story, and that's really one of a kind, I'd say.
It's at the end of the Victorian kind of beginning of the industrial age that story takes place. So it's kind of like during that time when they were really going into the Congo and. Dealing with the cannibals in the Congo and that sort of thing.
It's really interesting.
It's a really interesting story.
Yeah, it was a no-brainer to accept as soon as I started reading it. I was like, unless it jumps the shark at the very end, it did. So.
And for those of you folks who don't know what that expression means, it means unless it just took a real bad turn south, that story was in.
Yeah.
Thank you, Happy Days, for that one.
Yeah. So now the book is out, correct?
Yes, it is. It was released on Halloween.
I couldn't think of a better time to release it, and here we are talking about it 3 days later. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly a year later, right, Hyder? Because then we closed submissions on Halloween.
We closed submissions on Halloween and released on Halloween.
Wow.
Yeah, we gave ourselves a full year. We gave ourselves a full year to read the submissions and get it together, which we had 71 submissions.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, we had near 100. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was crazy.
But it tells me that people are interested and willing to try something new. If that's not their genre, they're like Alder, willing to step out of the box and out of their comfort zone and say, okay, let me see if I can do this.
We had quite a few people who had never really written anything before come out of the woodworks and write something for them.
Oh, yeah. I definitely hope this anthology will give them a great springboard, because every story is unique to the character of its writer, of its creator, and there's no two stories that are really alike. I mean, and we just didn't do that by too much on purpose. It just kind of naturally came to be where these, we had like a no, definitely no, a maybe, and a definitely yes pile. And we wrote all notes individually on them because Hydra would get the submissions because she went out and spread the word about submission calls in the different groups and sites because she has a connection that I don't. And then they came and then she forwarded those emails to me, and then we both read them, and we took notes, and then we Skyped, and we had a session there, and we talked to each other, and we told each other, definitely, okay, those are both no's, yes, agree. Oh, I kind of like this one, why? Okay, well, I don't like it because of that. Oh, okay, well, I agree with you, and then maybe flip on her side. And, you know, there are some stories, there were like at least one or two stories. I wasn't quite sure about the anthology, but, you know, she really liked it for this point, and I didn't really see it like that before. And then we decide, okay, yeah, I see your point. Let's put it in. And I think based on those results, it cut it down to the best stories in quality and character and diversity.
I love
one thing we really strived for was to have almost no supernatural elements in it, or to have very downplayed supernatural elements, and we really wanted it to be people engaging in cannibalism because that's what they wanted to do, or that's what they were forced to do. We didn't want zombies or ghouls or anything like that.
Yeah.
You wanted normal plumber Joe down the street who, for whatever reason, decided that he wanted the taste of human flesh and how he went about preparing that.
Yes.
Well, you know, one story plays off of supernatural or mythical elements. One story involves playing off of what's called Wendigo psychosis, and that is usually unique to the Algonquin Indians, where it's symbolic. It's kind of literal to where you would eat human flesh, more by choice, in a way, even though you're influenced by this demonic, if you will, hunger or this possessed hunger. But it would be like you'd have cravings for human flesh, even though there is abundances of food. Because, you know, historically, aside from eating cannibal, engaging in cannibalism because of ritual or ceremonial honorings of the dead, people would resort to cannibalism because of dire situations, like the Donner Party, as you know, or the Jamestown Colony, or the Air Force Flight 571, I believe it's called, the one that crashed in the Andes, where with a rugby team. You know, where they were, you know, they had to eat the dead bodies of their loved ones, you know, and that's a very, very hard, gut-wrenching thing, heartbreaking thing to do. And we wanted that aspect to be fairly prominent. And, you know, the one story that has the Wendigo psychosis playing off of that was very well done, you know, and the author who did that is Misty Tyers. I believe is this her first writing?
It's her first. She did some writing. I think she said she did some writing back in like high school or college. But this is her first time really, really doing anything. And she's another one who just kind of knocked it out of the park. You know, we had to work with her on a few things with the story, but I mean, the bones of the story were excellent from the start.
Wow.
So you know, I mean, she really did well.
And she had one of the best similes, I'd say, or metaphors to terrain I've ever read anywhere. And if you permit me, I'd like to read that passage when I find it, if you don't mind. It's just a brief little thing, but
okay. Well, I have to hurry because believe it or not, we're running out of time.
Are we running out?
We
now?
Are. Yeah.
Well, then maybe I should say it. I'm going to use it as a teaser, and I'll just say she uses a great terrain, bestial association that just really caught my eye, and it's such a great use of words, and she did a lot of that throughout her story. And you know,
yeah, she did a wonderful, just an absolutely beautiful job of describing the surroundings that her characters were in the environment. And I mean, she did a beautiful job of it. Really painted the picture for you.
Yeah.
And that's what you want, is someone that can put you in that environment so that you're in the story and it's hard for you to get out of the story.
You know? Yeah. And that's what we wanted. We wanted people to be able to relate. You know, we have stories about post-apocalyptic worlds. We have stories about, revenge. We have stories about aristocratic dying. We have a we have a Nyotai Mori story, which is a sushi girl story. You know, we have so many different kinds of things. And then, of course, we have just a kill them and cut them up and torture them, of course. And then we have survival stories, of course. So we really, I think, Hydra, I'd say that we really ran the gamut with what
we really,
provided.
We really tried to provide every aspect of the cannibalism, you know.
Well, with
theme.
That being said, before we run out of time, Alder, tell people where you can be found right quick.
Well, I can be found on Facebook, probably the best place to go, just Alder Strauss Expressions, so facebook.com, you know, / ALDERSTRAUSS, and then Expressions. And that's where you can, I have a pinned post there, and you can see all the links to where you can buy the books, the print and Kindle editions. And I update that frequently with stuff from the book.
And Ms. Hydra, tell folks where you can be found.
If they go to HydraMStar.com, they can find links to my Facebook, Twitter, links to the books to buy, submission guidelines for the magazine, just everything. Just everything
there. And remember this, ladies and gentlemen, she is starting her own imprint for publishing for Erotica Horror, so
yes.
You want to check into that. And this is our last show for the week. I want to thank Hydra and Alder, and y'all just stay online after the show goes dark because I want to tell y'all a few things. But I want to thank you guys for hitting me up and say, Vine, get us on the show, because I would have found a way because y'all rock. This has been so informative.
So
I loved every minute of it. Next week, we will be on Eastern Standard Time, ladies and gentlemen, because we roll our clocks back tonight. We gain an hour. So starting next Wednesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, we will start up a new week of shows. So you want to be here for that because it's going to be very, very interesting. You know, at the end of every show, there's a couple of things I say, and one of those is don't just feel special, be special, because if you just feel special, you'll never be special. And if you want to achieve greatness, please stop asking permission, because Hydra and Alder both will tell you people will not give you permission to be great. They want you to stay down in the pit of despair with them.
Mm-hmm.
Your smile is your logo. Your personality is your business card. And how you leave others feeling after having had that experience with you, ladies and gentlemen, trust me, it is your trademark. They will never remember your name nor what you look like, but they will always remember how you made them feel. And the difference between who you are today and who you want to be tomorrow is what you do today. So if you want to change your life and you want to be somebody different, then I suggest that you do something different. So don't forget, this is the last show for the week. Thank my guest, Ms. Hydra M. Starr, and her compatriot in crime, Alder Strauss, both prolific writers, both wonderful, wonderful artists in their own right. And when they collaborated on the new Bon Appetit book on cannibalism, you must get that. No, you cannot go yet. You have to wait till the show goes dark. Now, is it on Amazon, Hydra?
Yes, it's on Amazon for Kindle, and it's probably better priced through Lulu for everyone to get an imprint.
Okay, so you heard
look
it
for me,
first.
Hydra M. Starr or Bon Appetit.
There you go. So, ladies and gentlemen, off the chain, I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and my guest, Hydra M. Starr and Alder Strauss, appreciate so much you all coming and visiting with us for an hour because it has been informative, educational, and fun. All of those lovely words that we enjoy. And I hope y'all will come back and visit with me. I would love for y'all to come back.
Of course.
See how easy that was?
I'd love to.
Okay.
I'd love to. That'd be great.
All right. It's a date. So until next Wednesday night at Eastern Standard Time, 8 o'clock, this is Yvonne Mason with Off the Chain, and we wish you a wonderful good evening. Okay, we're off the air. Hydra knows because she's done this before, but everything we say is going to go up in archives. When the show goes dark, when we hang up, the show goes up into archives, I'm going to put it on my page and I'm going to tag both of y'all in it. Take this show and use it as part of your promotion for the book.
Will do. I love it.
Tomorrow, I will put it up on Spreaker, SoundCloud, MixCloud, Podcast, and Podcast.com. And when I put it up on those five podcasts, I will also put the link up on my page and tag y'all in it. It automatically goes up to YouTube, iTunes, FM.com, and TuneIn Radio.
Okay, that
sounds
great.
Good.
I appreciate this. This is great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so y'all just take it and run with it like you stole it.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I'm sure when they check out the anthology, they'll realize it's also a recipe book. Because, I was like, I was really happy with the show. I wasn't sure how much time we had, though.
So you had a whole hour. And it was so much fun. It went by so fast.
I was just going to say
fun.
That, yeah. Yeah, I did not know that.
And Alder, you were perfectly at ease. You explained
the
book and everything perfectly. I loved it.
Well, I've been drinking wine, so that helps.
That always helps.
It's called carnivore wine, actually. It's actually called carnivore wine. So, I got this theme going all around me.
Oh, my Lord. Carnivore wine and Bon Appetit. How much better does it get than that?
I don't know, but if there is, I'll find a way.
So on that note, and the fact that y'all will come back, I appreciate it so much. And I'll,
of course.
And maybe when you come back, you'll have something else exciting in the works. I know you will.
I'm sure I will. I'll be in contact with you probably soon about the different authors I'm going to have, with Inferno Link Books and possibly some other people you might be interested in.
Yeah, we'll get them on the show. And Alder, you've got to get your short stories in some other places so we can pimp them too.
I'll do my best. My life is taking such a busy turn. I don't know if I'll have time to do much writing, but when I do, I'll definitely keep you in a loop. And of course, if stuff comes through Hydra, if I have some, Hydra, come to think of it, I did have something I was thinking of doing and find something to do it. It's called This Little Piggy, and we talked about that, and I started writing it. So once I complete that, I guess I'll send it through you, and Yvonne, I'm sure you'll note down the chain for off the chain.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm terrible. I'm terrible.
Well, with that, I'm
going to
get
off. Don't get this one started on the puns, trust me.
Don't get me started, bud. Unless you want some more punishment. Oh, no. Okay.
Oh, Lord. Well, with that, I'm going to end the show, and I'll get this up in archives and get it to you guys. And thank you again, Hydra. Thank you so much for saying, Yvonne, please get us on the show because it was a wonderful.
I appreciate you getting us on so quickly, and you're wonderful. So.
I had so much fun. This is one of the best times I've had, and I'm not just saying that because I want to get back on the show. I'm saying it because it was.
Well, that's the history of this show, Alder, is people soon forget they're on a radio show. They just think that they're having a telephone conversation with a crazy white woman from Georgia that lives in Florida now. So.
Well, it works for me, so I'm just going to run with it.
So you don't have to be nervous anymore. Just because we have 68,000 listeners, you don't have to be nervous.
Oh, no. As soon as we start going, not at all nervous. I'm just like, I didn't realize there's just so much to talk about concerning this anthology. There's some stuff I wish we would have gotten to, but that's okay. They'll find out when they look at the book. But, there's only so much you can do in an hour.
Well, that, and you can come back and talk about it some more because you cannot overpimp a book.
No.
Okay, well.
And, some of the authors may even be interested. Some of the other authors may be interested in coming.
Yeah, if you want to do a Bon Appetit regurgitated, then, that'd be great.
Yeah, we could do that. we'll relaunch the book in April.
I'm sure, yeah. Then we could talk more about, the latter half, because there's the recipes, there's a crime game in there. I put so much into this anthology, it's fucking ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
All right, I'm going to put y'all down for a night in April. So
Okay, great.
Okay.
I thought Heidi was going to beat me over the head from North Carolina because I was putting so much shit in his anthology.
I considered it.
I was like, okay, I have this idea, and she's like, dot, dot, dot. Don't worry, I'll take care of it, Heidi. Don't worry, I'll take care of it, and I did. You know, and I kept saying, don't worry, I'll take care of it so much, Kara. She's like, oh, I want to go grocery shopping. I'm like, Hydra, don't worry, I'll take care of it. I'm like, well, you know, you got to do that.
So, seeing we didn't get half of it, that will regenerate even more interest in the book when we talk about the things we didn't get about tonight.
Okay, perfect.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
Sounds good.
I love it. Yeah.
Sounds really
let
good.
Let us know. Let us know. And, of course, you know, I'd love to come back on. You know, you're awesome. You have an amazing personality. You're a lot of fun. And Hydra thinks you're cool, so you can't go wrong with that. So you got, like, you know, street cred there, too. So.
Y'all are making a girl blush.
Anybody that can put up with me for over a decade has to be good people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well,
see,
you know, I just drink more and turn the other way. I'm good to go.
Yeah, exactly.
I just good exactly. people. See, she's a Southern girl, so she and I understand each other.
Yeah,
I'm a goddamn Yankee, so I don't know anything, right?
And I've lived in the wet state of Washington. Didn't like it, so I left.
Oh, I'd love it, but you know, to each their own. And I'd love to visit the South someday. I still have to do that. So.
Oh well, you should. You may never want to go back to Washington.
Oh, I hope that's not the case.
One of my best friends here in North Carolina, she's from Washington State originally, and she moved here and never went back.
See, so. I rest my case.
Well, you never know. Hydra might be that charming, so I don't know.
There you go. All right, guys.
Okay.
I'm going to get off from here and get this thing up
okay.
so I can get it to you. And once again,
okay.
thank you so much, and I'll get you guys down for April.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, that
I'll
sounds great. Thank you so much, Yvonne.
Is a Saturday night good for both of y'all?
Yeah, any
night
is good for me.
Okay.
Yeah, Saturday night's always good. Evenings, I find myself free, and weekends, of course.
Okay.
If anything doesn't work, I'll let you know. Yeah, if
all
anything
right.
doesn't work, I'll let you know far in advance. I usually do.
That works.
Okay.
Talk to y'all
talk
later. Good night,
okay.
guys.
You have a great one. Thank you so much.
You too. Bye-bye.